Hello and welcome back to episode 5 of the Tale of Two Counties podcast. Today we are talking about maternity services and we've got a guest from you, Matt. Hello Matt, how are you doing?
Hello mate, I'm good thanks Charlie. Yeah, I'm delighted to bring Sue in a bit to talk to us from Lincolnshire and the Better Births team. She'll tell us a bit more about that in a minute. But before we get into that, I think the Bored Conversations podcast has gone really, really well.
Come
Do you want to know why?
Give us a stat, Matt.
Matt. Okay, a stat, Matt. Right, well, apparently we've had over 900 downloads in the USA. So to our American listeners, thank you for listening in. No idea why you're particularly interested in connecting with health in England, but... please do get in touch. It'd be great to reach out and have an international podcast, Charlie, maybe.
Well, we've gone international. We've broken the US, which is hard for pop stars. So
yeah, we've done better than Robbie Williams. So, yeah, and I think when we first talked, after the first episode, we'd got like one listener in India and one in Denmark, I think. I think they're keeping in touch, looking at the stats, which are verified on Podbean. So thank you to the people at Podbean for doing that work for us. But anyway, shall I bring Sue in?
Please do. Yeah, so, introduce your guest for us today, Matt.
Yes, it was great to hear your guest from the outpatients last week. But, you know, Lincolnshire sees the outpatients unit at Dorchester and goes, we raise you maternity service. So Sue Jarvis is a neonatal and maternity programme manager for NHS Lincolnshire ICB. She's been a nurse, a midwife, a neonatal nurse. She's background why she moved into the current role in 2016 following the publication of the NHSE Better Births. She's lead on the delivery of improvements with maternity and neonatal services, obviously in Lincolnshire, and she's ensuring that the service user voice is a pivotal part of the programme. And she's also keen to link to physical activity. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Sue Jarvis. Hello, Sue.
Hello, Matt. Hello, Charlie. And I'm really sorry, there is a typhoon flying over my house at the moment.
Brilliant. Brilliant. You can't beat a bit of live radio for a typhoon noise. Thanks ever so much for coming on, Sue, and joining us.
My pleasure.
I think just in terms of background, you and I met probably about 5-6 months ago, but prior to me starting at Active Lincolnshire, you'd worked with some other colleagues of mine, hadn't you? So
I have, yeah.
There'll be a bit of history there that you'll be able to share with us in a bit when we get into that.
Yeah.
And also you, our work together, we're working with plenty of partners, aren't we, through this. So we shouldn't just think of it just one person from the ICB and Matt from Active Lincolnshire. There's a broader group around it. So
yeah, and you're well embedded in our transformation group now, aren't you, Matt?
That was a key line.
Stakeholders across the whole of Lincolnshire. So that's children's services, maternity, health visiting, mental health, voluntary sectors, and also the service user voice. So you are part of that group as well, which is really good.
Great stuff.
Big tick.
Great.
There. There's a big klaxon.
Big klaxon going off, yeah.
Embedded in there. Well, is that your phone ringing for the all the people in the US trying to make contact there?
No, definitely. I want to know why it's on Do Not Disturb and it still made a noise. I was hoping to gloss over
You
that.
Thought you'd got away with it. We spot everything here.
Yeah. It's definitely on Do Not Disturb, though, but never mind. Okay. Charlie, go on, start us off with a question. I'm gone.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about this because I think there's lots of opportunities in maternity services and we're doing a bit of work in Dorset, but we're so keen to learn from you guys because you're further ahead of us. So I guess, Susie, could you start us off sort of just... giving your perspective on why you feel it's important we embed physical activity in maternity services and what's the driver for you in terms of embedding physical activity in what you do?
Yeah, I think if I could go back to just sort of where we started off with this conversation, I think it would be really helpful. Yeah. So myself and at the time the consultant midwife Yvonne, we were aware of increasing levels of people struggling with their weight coming through maternity services, increasing issues around joint pain, back pain that was making people more immobile, you know, just sort of the normal complications that you get throughout pregnancy that was reducing people's activity. So we started off by just talking to people and saying to them, you know, why are you not very active? What's going on here? What are the sort of barriers? And that was really interesting because there are lots of urban myths about, oh, you're pregnant, you mustn't exercise. My mum said that she did this and she had 6 miscarriages and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We heard lots of stuff like that. So we tried to drill down a bit more to actually find out, really, are those the messages that are happening? And also we heard that professionals were sharing those messages as well. So there were people that had been really physically active before they were pregnant, people who were horse riding, doing ballet, they were doing all sorts of stuff. And all of a sudden, when they came pregnant, they were told, no, stop, absolutely stop. And those people really struggled, not only like physically, but with their mental health as well, because that was part of keeping them well. So at that time, we contacted Active Lincolnshire and said, oh, is there anything we could probably do together to try and change the messaging around activity and change these tales and what it could be? But also as well, talking with our midwifery colleagues and our health visiting colleagues and the early years teams about what are you actually saying to women? What are you saying? What do you think? What are your beliefs? And that was a really, really interesting conversation to hear what people were saying. And then I think the other thing was that we managed to get training about physical activity into mandatory training for midwives so that we could start to change that conversation.
I think you've started to sort of touch on a few there, but the thing I've learned quickly is just how many people and organisations are involved in that timeline from the moment somebody goes, even before they get pregnant, actually thinking, well, I might like to be pregnant, yeah, right the way through to the child going to school. That now, what did you call it? Conception to reception?
We did. That's right.
Yeah. 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 So that so many different organisations and people. And yet, as you said, there's that kind of myth running through it that you shouldn't maybe be physically active, or the yeah, worry, and you can understand why ladies would be worried, and if people are talking around miscarriage, etc., then yeah, yeah, it makes sense to be hesitant. But it's almost like there's this plethora of professionals who all maybe don't know. Is that fair to say, going back with
you? I think so. Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And I think you're right. And I think when people are pregnant, everybody always focuses on the midwife and says it's the midwife's responsibility. But actually, when you look at it, how many times people see a midwife, sorry, another typhoon, compared to, you know, you might see a GP, you might see a health visitor, you might see the early years teams at children's centres. All those people, like you say, Matt, could have an influence on what's happening with people in their pregnancy journey. Some women who are high risk, and those are the women that have got more complications, and maybe those are some of the women that we need to get some more messages over to, sometimes don't see as many midwives as somebody who's going through a normal pathway, because they're busy going to see the obstetrician, they're in more scans, they might be having more tests. So again, some of those women where we might need to get some messages in don't always see the right people, and then are those people giving them the right messages? Yeah. You know, it's very difficult. And actually, when you speak to the women, it's different depending on which perspective you're coming from.
It's really interesting picking up on it. It feels like there's a bit of a conversation here about risk and physical activities, yeah, and they're in relation to maternity, all that perception that it's a risk.
Yeah.
And I wonder too if it sort of plays into that narrative around actually starting a behaviour change like physical activity can actually be deemed as a risk increasing behaviour, rather than maybe giving up smoking when you become pregnant and stopping drinking, you know, is a positive thing to be doing. It's an interesting dynamic, isn't it? I wonder how you've overcome that maybe with your workforce.
Yeah, I think what we've tried to do is all those things, stopping smoking, having a healthy diet, being active physically and mentally, support you to have a better pregnancy, and potentially help you cope better when you're going through the physical demands of labour as well, because it's not called labour for no reason, because it's hard work. Yeah. So even if you are somebody who has to have a cesarean section, if you're physically well beforehand, you're more likely to recover much more quickly and be able to get on with your life again. And I think it is changing those conversations. So like Matt was saying, it is that conception to reception bit that we really need to make sure that we're embedding. So it's about, if you want to get pregnant, about being fit for pregnancy. So what are the things that you could do to make sure you have a healthy pregnancy, and then going right the way through to your children going to school. Actually, if we've been fit and had a healthy diet and not smoked, those children are going to a better outcome, and that fitness and the well-being and the health, eating well, is part of their normal life. It's just what happens to them as well. So it gets embedded into them as well. And I think there is a lot we need to do without in our communities about changing some of those urban myths. I keep saying urban myths, but those urban myths which will make a difference.
I think you're kind of moving a conversation towards the women now, which is really interesting, because we've talked there briefly around that the system and all the partners involved. But actually the experience that the ladies get and the message that they get, that obviously is something you're very passionate about, isn't it? And the voice of them. And one of your colleagues put me in touch with a lady called Kim, who we did a quick case study on, and she said it was a great phrase. She says, people train to run a marathon, but they don't do training to give birth. And I thought, oh, okay, yeah, here's something to get your head around, like almost being fit enough to deal with the physical load that's about to come. So we carried on the conversation. We looked in a few bits and we found that I think it was something like 1 in 4 ladies meet the medical officer's recommendations for physical activity minutes. And that needs unpicking a bit as well, because that's not all about running and, I don't know, trampolining or anything crazy like that. It's just moving, isn't it? You know, the walk to the shops. So is the things in place now across our pathway where people get to kind of be signposted to something as simple as that? Or are we still in that kind of urban myth around you've got to get a sweat on for it to really count?
That's really interesting, because we're doing the equity and equality work at the moment. So we've been trying to look at what's out there in our community assets for people and mapping that out. And that is really different in each area. So if you look at Stamford or you look at Mablethorpe and what is on offer in those two areas, it's completely different and what people do. And I think prior to COVID, we were really doing some work around with the groups, and maybe, you know, I met a group of ladies in Skegness who were walking from the children's centres up to the seafront, but actually they'd got that physical and mental wellbeing support because they'd met a new group of people. They were doing the physical activity but not realising it, and going up to the front, having a cup of coffee and walking back to the children's centres again. So I think there's a load of work we need to do, because actually when you go and do that community asset mapping, it's really difficult to find it as well. So if you're a pregnant person and you want to know, where can I go and do some exercise? And that's the other thing as well. When we talked to pregnant women, they were saying, oh, is that about yoga when you're pregnant? No, it's not about yoga. It can be about just walking, just go for a walk, walk to the school rather than take your car, you know, take the dog out, go to around the garden, do some gardening, you know, the different things that are physical activity that make people change. But I think the yoga is one of the things that people do it. And then we have a group of people who go, oh, that's just for that group of mums, and I don't want to go and do that. Also about what you need to wear to do physical activity. You know, I can't afford to buy the light kit. I don't want to do that. I don't want to go into a gym because everybody's going to look at me because I might be overweight or I'm pregnant. Swimming seems to be a bit more acceptable. People seem to, you know, because I think there are some antenatal swimming classes that people, you know, are quite keen on doing, and with other pregnant women. And also people are quite keen to get the children swimming. So that seems to be a conversation that you can have. But again, it's all I think it's that urban myth again, you know, that it doesn't have to be yoga or running down the road, or it's about a whole host of stuff that I think we need to try and share with people and say, this is physical activity. One of the things the girls are doing in my team for the equity and equality thing is she's doing some mapping about just walking to the school in Skegness. So if you walk to the school in Skegness, how many steps that could be and how that could increase your physical activity. So we're looking at simple things that people might think, I could do that.
Yeah. And that's simple. Well, obviously we talk a lot about cost of living and all that, but that simple, easy access start is a great way forward.
Yeah.
And then, because some of the things that we've done in Lincolnshire, started to do, we're looking at some of those interventions, aren't we? And I think probably 2 years ago, through the pandemic, funding was sourced to support professionals to get the qualification to be able to support physical activity sessions. So I'm thinking now, like the PT in the local gym, training them up. So what was the thought process around trying to train the physical activity sector?
Well, that was one of the things that women fed back to us, that they said that they'd gone into local gyms and people said, oh no, we can't do anything with you because you're pregnant, and we're not really sure what to do with you afterwards when you've gone back and you've had a cesarean and you need to, or don't know about anything like that. So again, myself and Yvonne were like, right, okay, then what could we do, and is there something that we could access to get some training for the gym instructors so they can do this and then they feel confident? And then that's how that all came about. But that was on the back of what women told us, that they'd actually be going to gyms and being said, oh no, you're pregnant, you need to stop at the door though.
Yeah.
I think the other barrier was about, you know, taking a baby with you. So, you know, for some people, they haven't got anybody to look after that baby, but they do want to come in and do some gym work. And the reluctance of people allowing a baby in as well. So there was a whole host of stuff around that.
I think we've obviously got our physical activity colleagues who will be listening, who'll be thinking around what training they can put in, and I guess part of the question I keep coming back to is how much training do we need? Because we've been giving birth for quite a while, haven't we, as a species? This isn't a new phenomenon. It's not a COVID-19. It's not this is something we've done a long time. But actually that fear of what do I need to know to be able to let you into my gym, swimming pool, whatever, and what support do I need? Is there a risk we might be worried about trying to overtrain people?
Yeah, I think we might. You know, pregnancy is a normal thing. It's not an illness. It's a normal thing that female bodies go through. And I just think, it's about maybe we need to get together with everybody and go, do you know what? People who are pregnant, just like everybody else, happen to be pregnant. And there might be some things that they physically can't do because they've got a big bump in front of them. But actually, they can do most things. And actually supporting people to keep active and maintain that activity during the pregnancy is really important. So not only is it urban myths within the population itself, but also the specialists as well. I think, you know, we need to get everybody together, don't we, to have those conversations.
There's a lot here, isn't there, about changing the narrative and what I'm hearing from what you're saying, Sue. And it sounds fantastic, the work that you've done in listening to actually voices, not only from the professionals you're talking to, but the women and in your community assets and what are you hearing to then kind of direct the work that you folks have been doing in Lincolnshire, which is really interesting. I wonder if you could tell us a bit more about how you mentioned you'd been able to implement some mandatory training. We've tried to do that within a few professions in Dorset, particularly around sort of allied health professionals and MSK colleagues, come up against a few barriers in making that happen. We've had the idea and everyone's favourable, but actually making it happen is the hard bit, because there's lots of calls on professionals' time about what's already mandatory and how much time they have. Could you tell us a bit about how you've made it mandatory, or the process you went through, and if you had any barriers, Sue, from colleagues that said, no, Sue, you're crazy, you can't do that.
I probably did to begin with. I think the tech that we used was within maternity services, we were seeing a higher instance of women who were high risk. And it was like, right, what is this about? And actually, it was around obesity, diabetes, smoking. So those were the big things for us in Lincolnshire. So when our midwifery colleagues were going to us and said, oh, you know, we've got more women who require these extra things. Right, what can we do about it? So what is it we can do? Actually, within our training, if we knew more about this, then we could signpost people to this. We could give them the right advice. And that was the thoughts that we had behind this, that actually, if midwives felt empowered to talk to women about it, maybe it would help address some of these high risk issues we've got. Maybe it would support, you know, we've got 1 in 5 women who are diabetic, 1 in 4 who are obese. So, I mean, we need to address that, because those women go on a high risk pathway, they're more likely to have a cesarean section, they're more likely to have complications during the pregnancy. So it's a whole host of things. And diabetes in itself, you know, you're more of an increase of diabetes. And actually, if you get gestational diabetes, you're more likely to get type 2 diabetes when you're older. So actually, if we could do something at the beginning to help, and we give the professionals the right tools to be able to talk to them so they feel empowered, it's just part of a normal conversation about, you know, not smoking. It's because everybody's used to having that not smoking conversation. Actually, what else can we do with you? We can talk to you about how you can be physically active. And it's about tailoring it to the person that's sitting in front of you as well. But what could they do in their life that could make them physically active, and not, like Matt says, the running or the trampolining or something, but what physically could you do? And if it is that you could change and walk your children to school every day, then that just adds in that activity into the thing. And we have had women who said that, you know, they didn't think about some of the simple things that they could do.
And I think the from a bigger picture and from Active Partnership, you know, we're looking at one specific cohort of people here, which I think, Sue, did you say between sort of 6,000 and 7,000 people a year in Lincolnshire that it would be?
About 6,000 to 7,000.
So I mean, that's quite a big audience to be listening to a message around, you know, to be more physically active, and you roll that out over several years, that's a lot of people getting that repeat message. But then you think about it, if the children go to school and the school teachers are saying about active travel to school, and it's a big part of a societal change, isn't it, into a more active society, and yeah, we are kind of starting right at the start of that pathway for that particular child. And
I
wonder
think
as well,
pregnant women are a good audience, aren't they? Because pregnant women on the whole want their best for their babies.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're very passionate about doing the right thing. So, you know, if you can embed it in that time and then their children are active, that makes a difference, like you say.
And I wonder as well if there's a financial element to it as well, because I'm listening to what you're saying there with the stats and actually thinking if, you know, obviously if people are more active, we might need less services in the future. We might need to be active. But what about like the equipment? So you mentioned before around diabetes and overweight. So I guess there's an impact on the hospital if there are bigger ladies using the services. Is that seen?
Absolutely. So if we've got ladies who are bigger, they need certain pieces of equipment. So they might need bigger beds. They might need hoists. We need different theatre tables for people that are bigger. There's a whole host of stuff that, you know, somebody who's bigger might have a baby that ends up in a neonatal unit, then the cost on the services for the baby going into neonatal unit, you know, gestational diabetic, there is a chance, doesn't always happen, and I must say that doesn't always happen, but these are the risks, and it's the cost pressure, isn't it? And also if somebody is out of action for quite a long time, a lady who's pregnant and you know, is quite heavy and it's really challenging enough to get moving afterwards. The cost pressure on her family as well to make sure everybody's around to help and people taking time off work. And there's a whole host of stuff that comes into it, I think.
Charlie,
I was going to ask you a question on that. How have you worked as an active partnership to support Sue with some of this? Sue's highlighted quite a lot where there's opportunities. Could you tell us a little bit about the role that you've played in your team?
I wasn't ready for that, mate. I thought I were co-presenting this. I'm not prepared.
It's my turn to get revenge now.
Yeah, sorry, mate. Sorry. Yeah. Well, do you know what? What I found absolutely fascinating, I'm not just saying because Sue's here, but obviously there's professionals in the system in there who can really help you in understanding what the hell's going on out there. So I met with Sue and we got some flip chart and I'm scribbling away and I'm getting this understanding of all these different touch points and places we could be. And then I'm going back to the physical activity sector. I'm thinking, well, how does somebody at that stage of this journey access a leisure centre or a yoga class or whatever? And I'll put my hands up early on. I'm looking at those easy wins thinking, oh, women like yoga. Yoga babes is quite popular and aqua babies, that's quite popular. But actually, when you think about those people, and I mentioned Kim before in the case study, she was passionate about netball. And as a young woman played netball at school and then has disconnected with it. But as soon as she found netball and found her group again, she's connected in so much more. And it was only through walking first and getting her steps in that she started to move back towards some things that she knew from a previous life. So I think we've got a lot of work to do around how we find all those different activities that are out there, whether it's the 5-6 people that play bowls in the village hall locally, or whether it's the big mass participation stuff, and trying to find something for everyone and get that broad offer, because it's wrong to think, oh, we need a 1-hour intervention here because that's what they need, and it can be yoga for women that are pregnant. Yeah, that's time's moved on, hasn't it? We need more.
And have you done work around the training to support Sue and Matt? Because obviously we all know there's a wealth of training out there around physical activity. Is that something you've worked together on to provide for the workforce, or perhaps are hoping to, haven't yet, but it's on the plan?
Yeah, it's coming soon.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. And you're providing that, your team, or linking into something else? Or
well, there's so many things and bits and pieces out there. I think it's quite overwhelming for me. So if I was a midwife with all the other agendas to look at for this particular baby, I don't want 10 different training opportunities. I want somebody that filters that for me and helps me. So we've worked with the training hub for Lincolnshire to start looking at what's the priority ones and how we go from there. And I think there's also a little bit of a role about some light touch training, the little sound bites of stuff that can help people along the way, because as you said earlier, there's massive pressures. But so how do you think some of that will land? We're looking the crystal ball now, aren't we?
Yeah, we are, definitely. No, I think if we could signpost people to things, I think that'd be really helpful. So what we're trying to do is develop a bank of information. So actually, if you're And we're thinking about how we can use our midwifery support workers a bit differently, so that they're the ones that can somehow give some of this other information, because the midwives are so busy doing the midwifery bit that actually those support workers are the ones who could do some of that intervention prevention stuff and make sure that they're armed with the right messages. Because actually sometimes women will have a conversation with a midwifery support worker that they might not have with a midwife. That's no disrespect to either person, but sometimes it doesn't seem quite like as much of a challenge, whereas if I raise something with the professional, the nurse, the doctor or somebody, they're going to go, oh, whereas if I can talk to you, you might have a bit of a kind of conversation with me about how I can do this. So actually going asking about some information, I think, is the way that we're thinking that we might go. So that intervention prevention sort of role and how we can use that. And I think that would work really well.
There's also the bit we gathered some insight, didn't we, last year?
Yeah.
That's on our website if people did want to have a look at it. But no surprise that ladies are telling us they are more likely to listen to their healthcare professional. So that we've got that kudos of midwife passing on information that we need to use to our advantage. And there's two points out there. So some of those sneakier conversations might be with somebody else, because the midwife is seen as such an important person for, you know, maybe they don't want to admit to being inactive. Yeah. when they go and meet them. So yeah, I think there's a wraparound, Charlie.
Yeah. Okay. And can I ask you, Sue, about sort of maternity transformation? We're transforming all services, aren't we, continually? But I acknowledge there's a whole host of transformation going on within maternity services. And yes, what opportunities do you think that presents for that prevention piece that you were talking about earlier? Are there specific sort of NHS England guidance or best practice that really is a hook? I'm an active partnership, how do I hook this into what is going to resonate with a maternity service manager?
Yeah, I think that the whole vision for Better Births is about making maternity services safer, kinder, involving families, etc. And actually what we need to do is when we look at the risks around maternity, what are those and what can we do to improve those outcomes for families? So those are the main things. So I think about speaking to people, what is it that you're struggling with in this? What is it that we could do to improve your outcome? So to improve your outcome is to get your fit and well, mind and body, because that, you know, we absolutely know that will give you a better outcome. So I think it's very much embedded in the whole Better Births vision about safer outcomes, because you need to start at the beginning, don't you, and make sure that the women are fit and healthy and their families are as well, because that helps the community as well. So I think it's very much embedded in prevention. When I wrote the original document for Better Births Lincolnshire, we had a whole section about public health, the agenda about, you know, smoking is a real issue in pregnancy in Lincolnshire. What is it about that? What do we need to do around that? So I'm really passionate about the prevention work and what we can do to make things better for the families, because we'll see better outcomes.
And are there things that happen, Sue, that you can't foresee that make that a challenge? Our experiences in Dorset is that you have this wonderful strategy like Better Births, and you have a great plan, and then something comes along like COVID, or in the maternity world locally, what we've spoken about is the Ockenden report with a whole host of recommendations. And for midwives and services, absolutely, that's a priority about getting that right, learning from those mistakes. But suddenly your prevention bit is squeezed into that's a nice to do, and we'll get to that because this is really important. How do you deal with that?
I think prevention is part of it, though, because if we do the prevention work, we get better outcomes. Yeah. So actually we need to embed it. And I think that's why within Lincolnshire we're really committed to that system partnership working. So our local maternity and neonatal system board, we've got representatives across the whole of Lincolnshire. So it's not just maternity. It is around our public health colleagues. It is around our mental health colleagues. It is around the voluntary sectors. It's about patient voice. So it's very much about how we all embed this, because I think if you do that prevention work, it will have the better outcomes, which is very much what Ockenden say. So some of the issues are around, you know, the fact that ladies are coming into maternity services perhaps not in the best state that they could be, whereas if we'd done something about it in the first place. And it's really difficult for maternity to make a change when somebody is already pregnant, because if somebody already comes into your service and they are already type 2 diabetic and they're already a smoker, maternity services, in the short period of time that they are engaged with that woman, it's very difficult for them to change that behaviour, but they need to be part of a system to be able to do it. So I'm very much about maternity can do X amount, but it's about how can we all work together to do it. And I think that is very much embedded in Ockenden and everything. And I'm absolutely passionate and say that all the time. It's not just about the sort of dictate that's come down to tick the box and the form, but it's about, you know, what can we do to make things better for women in Lincolnshire? And I think definitely physical activity and healthy living is something that we need to do to change things. I think the big challenge for us is the different areas that we have in Lincolnshire and the deprivation and what that might mean to one area compared to what it might mean to another. We've got a 10-year difference in life expectancy in one part of Lincolnshire to another. So how you can't do one size fits all. So it's very much about what is it that we can do over here that's going to make a difference to this family. Again, we still need to do something in the other areas, but actually it's completely tailored in a different way. So I absolutely think it's pivotal to the whole Ockenden, etc. In my thoughts.
What a great answer. She's good, isn't she, Charlie? I told you she'd be good.
Told you.
So when it came to like the tackling inequalities agenda, you know, we were looking at that from a physical activity point of view, but you shared a stat with me, Sue, around like there's some parts on our East Coast where it could take 2 hours for a lady, if she's not driving, to be able to get into some of the service provision.
Yeah.
So that kind of system-wide nudging through the community, that's really important for us as a rural county. You've had some experience of working in London, though, was it? You were in the city?
Yeah.
Is there a little bit of have you got some little tales around the difference between that kind of rural maternity?
It's completely different. So I worked in London. There's lots of hospitals are really close. There's lots of access to services. You can walk across the road. If you can't find it on that side of the road, you can walk on the other side of the road. It's completely different. The services are more joined up. You've got more choice. So Lincolnshire, we're the second largest county. Like Matt said, if you want to travel. So, you know, speaking to some women, if you want to travel from Skegness to Lincoln County Hospital, spoke to a lady, it took 4 hours to get there on a bus, 15-minute appointment, 4 hours to get home again. You know, so accessing services, it's something about being closer to home. So in the urban, and I do talk about this at the national meetings as well, what we talk about with urban maternity services is a completely different conversation with what we do about rural. You know, we almost need more staff in the rural areas because of how we're so widespread. And Lincolnshire, if you look at the map of Lincolnshire, Lincoln County Hospital is at the top of Lincolnshire almost, and Lincolnshire's underneath it all. So actually, people always talk about Lincoln, but Lincoln's not in the centre of our county, is it? So for people to get to it, it's really difficult. So I think there is the expectations around equality and equity, deprivation. You know, the East Coast, we're in the top 10% of deprivation in the country. You know, what does that mean for that part of our county compared to another part, compared to London, compared to Essex, compared to... We're much more aligned with Cornwall, Cumbria, those sort of areas are very much more like us. And considering, you know, we've got a huge swathe of Lincolnshire that's covered by the sea, it's, you know, in that respect itself, and we've got no motorways in Lincolnshire, we've got one A road, you know, so it is very, very rural. I was once asked by a minister at Westminster why we didn't have a motorway. I have no idea.
No idea.
Over
we ain't. You've painted Lincolnshire in a really bleak way there, Sue. But we
it's
have
lovely.
Got a Sue
it's
Jarvis.
A great county.
We've
it's
got
all right.
Sue
we
Jarvis.
Haven't got motorways either. It's fine. You're amongst friends here.
But I get my point. Kind of going back to sort of the physical activity message is, anyone listening in a kind of city setup. Well, we're going to argue it's going to be easier for them because there's more opportunities, more things. But I'm thinking more on that wraparound around the communities and what's around to get that messaging in. It might not just be the midwife that is a four-hour bus ride away or multiple buses away. It might be some of those community-based people might in a sort of a place-based type approach. Charlie, I know that's something that we've briefly talked about before. But next week, do you want me to pad a little bit? You're trying to get your drink in your mouth, aren't you?
I was trying to have a sip of water.
You have a sip
caught
of water.
Caught me on the hop.
And I'll just explain a little bit. Like, so next week, for example, we're going out and we're going to the East Coast and we're going to look at all the physical activity opportunities. But I'm going with that maternity lens on thinking, OK, so if you're a pregnant lady on this East Coast, where's the different touch points where you could get some physical activity messaging and other? And who are the people that are influencing that that community. And so I know you've got a little bit of a roadshow at the moment, aren't you, going around? And is it Tuesday, I think, you're out there?
It is, yeah, our first one. It's called What Matters to You. And we were very much doing the road on the floor. So, you know, getting fit for pregnancy, antenatally, postnatally, and school readiness. So that conception to reception still, that whole theme. And the various teams who can help and support people along the way. So absolutely what Matt's saying, it's about everybody along that pathway who can help and support pregnant women, not just the midwifery team. And I think there are those touch points. So there's like GPs, practices, you know, practice nurses, sexual health clinics. There's a whole host of other people who can share these messages about physical activity to women when they're going through the pregnancy journey and before, you know, that get fit for pregnancy bit as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we talk about connecting with health and embedding physical activity in a service, there are the touch points, the roadmap through it. You finish your mouthful now, Charlie. Get back.
I have. And that really resonates with you, because that is that whole system bit in action, isn't it? Everybody has a role to play, and it's just helping them to understand their opportunity to influence and support those women at whatever the time is that they're seeing them having that interaction. And I think that bit about health inequalities, where this is, again, it's almost in action in Lincolnshire, where you're thinking about, okay, we've got a certain level of service that we need to provide for everyone, but there'll be specific communities in which we need to do something differently, and that's okay. The service is going to look different because the needs are different over here, and we need to get more comfortable with that, because previously we're sort of like, no, we'll offer the same for everyone and then it's fair and everyone can access the same things, but we know that doesn't work exactly for the reasons you've described.
I think we've got to a point of wrapping up there. I think there's a few top tips. I think number one, let's make sure we're putting the people that are actually going to receive this, in our case, physical activity off it, right at the heart of it. Let's not assume that everyone wants to do yoga and aqua babies. There's the bit around the wider system and all the different touch points. It's not all on the midwife to say you need to move more, but it's everybody together as a collective trying to do that. And then something around that kind of that last topic there around the place that we are and what's in that place and who in that place can influence. Is that a good enough summary? Anything I've missed, ladies?
No, very good, Matt.
Thank you. Well, I guess it's just left to say thank you for joining us, Sue. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope it hasn't been too horrible for you. I'm really enjoying working with you and look forward to seeing what people have to say when they've listened to the podcast in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, that was some fantastic insight, Sue. Thank you. Well, definitely, I've scribbled some notes of things I'm going to go away and chat to some colleagues about.
Watch out, Dorset. Yeah, here we go.
thank
you very much again, Sue, and thank you everyone for listening. And we'll be back for another episode in a few weeks' time. Which, Charlie, I think we need to just get our heads together on a real good. How do you follow the two special guests we've had? It's been great, hasn't it?
No, go away and do some head scratching. Come up with another guest for episode 6.
Yeah, and I guess this is where we put the appeal out again. If you want us to explore something, please do get in touch and send us an email or give us a phone call. You can just Google Active Lincolnshire and Active Dorset and ask for Matt Evans or Charlie Coward, and we'll go from there. There we go. It's time to say goodbye. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. Goodbye.